You're listening to Your Music, Your Business, a podcast helping you to explore the business behind your music.
Hello all and welcome back to Your Music, Your Business, a podcast helping musicians and music industry professionals understand the music business. Today I'm joined by Jackson Trudell, drummer for Future Static, Lucend, The Materia, and sponsored by BSP Drumsticks and also a drum coach. Wow, Jackson, that was hard to say. Thank you so much for doing
through that.
My good friend, how are you?
Hello, I'm very well. I work was easy today. I've had a great day. I'm in a good mood.
And now we're finishing it off with an episode and some wine. Gotta love it.
Oh yeah, it's the day for it.
We definitely had a little bit of a joke just then about how much you had to twist my arm to get me to join you with a glass of wine. Wasn't that hard?
which wasn't much. No, I don't feel like I finished the sentence and you were already out that back door. And
yeah, I'm getting one. too funny. Well, to jump right into our episode, let's talk or tell everyone about how we met. Do you actually specifically remember how we did meet?
I don't. I'm like, it was at a show, obviously.
Obviously.
Was it? It wasn't Wrangler or something, was it?
It probably was. To be honest, I pitched this question because I don't remember.
Yeah. I think that makes sense.
It would have been like a terror show that I was imagining.
Exactly. Yeah.
At like Wrangler back in the day. Probably at the very start of my career when I was a baby.
That was like the first few serious shows I guess we had as Lucend was at like Wrangler. I think that makes sense. It makes sense that we met there, because I still have like really good connections like outside of yourself, obviously, that I've met playing shows at Wrangler. So let's go with Wrangler, because that
we'll go awesome. With that. I love it. Now, part of our episode today is actually dedicated to two topics, which is new for this podcast. The first topic is the fifth birthday of JY Management Group. We've worked together before, hence the friendship part. What is it that you loved most about working together?
Your level of drive and like dedication, attention to detail, and just like you are relentless in the best way possible. you live at this high standard, and I feel like the bands that you work with, you set the bar, and you give them the tools and everything they can possibly do to meet that high standard. In all honesty, it's not that hard to operate at a band that is separate from like the vast majority. Because there's only a few little things that bands need to really separate themselves and allow themselves to stick out from the oversaturated music industry. So I feel like, yeah, your level of detail and care really helps these bands shine through.
Wow. Thank you. Jesus. I was not expecting that response. I was expecting, yeah, you're just so nice to work with and just such a great time.
We can go back and I can just say that if that's what you want.
No, I'll take that. We'll cut, paste, done.
Sweet. Thanks for having me. I'll see you next time.
Yes, it was actually really interesting when I wrote this. I was thinking back to when we were working together on the Lucend project and doing a management trial. And for transparency with everyone here, we decided at the end of that trial that we just weren't the Lucend project, and where I was at the time as a manager just didn't quite fit. But I think what I really loved about working with you and the Lucend boys was that it was all just so easy to communicate, and that everyone was really kind and open to hearing what everyone wanted to hear and express. And I had fun chucking a tennis ball at you. And
of course.
The good old days.
The speaking ball.
Yes, exactly. Actually, for context for everyone, I do a little bit of a we'll call it team building exercise with my clients.
I think it was like group therapy.
Yeah. I go into it saying it's team building, and then all of a sudden it's group therapy, where I chuck the ball at the band members and ask them questions, and then they start asking each other questions. And I actually did that recently with Evergreener, who I'm working with at the moment, and they thought it was the most hilarious but also impactful like hour that we've ever spent together as a band, because you just surprisingly get so much out of each other, and I learned so much about you guys.
Yeah, because the second you start opening up a little bit, it's like a snowball effect, and then all these things that, I mean, at least with Loose End, like, we're all like best friends essentially, so like nothing we touched on was like new, but it was at a sort of level that we hadn't hit on before, which was, yeah, it was very, very entertaining and therapeutic at the same time.
Yeah, and I think some of it was sort of like opening up permission for you guys to ask that question as well, because I think there was a few questions being thrown around of like, you know, what's your commitment, when's your end goal, like when do you call it quits, all that sort of thing. Like, that was actually really therapeutic, and for everyone, I could tell by the end of it, because we're all just like, okay, good, now we know where everyone stands.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Whether we like it or not.
No, it was really good. It's a good exercise.
Yes, and I had sort of not really done it for a few years, partly because of COVID, but just because I don't know why, I just didn't feel the need. And then, yeah, when I whipped it out for Evergreener recently, I was like, oh, this is bizarre. I was trying to think back to all the questions that I asked you guys, like, so many years ago.
It'd be a great icebreaker as well, like, if... Like, that's like deep end shit. If you bring that out as like the first official like band meeting with you, like, that's a fucking fantastic icebreaker, because you get really deep into it really soon.
Yeah, which can be so essential, because it's like sometimes we get to the end of the 3-month trial or 2 years and working with the band, and then realize that, oh, actually, you're not as dedicated as you said you were. And also the thing about the tennis ball, it makes you think faster.
Put you on the spot. Yeah.
No, you don't have to overthink it, which is helpful. Now, that question was a completely self-centered one, to be completely frank. But I also thought it was really nice to like get a bit more of an understanding about like how our relationship was as we were working together. But my next one is sort of geared towards our beautiful release party that's coming up. You're in or playing with one of our three bands, Loose End, so a previous client of mine, and you're playing the 5th birthday at the Evelyn on the 23rd of October. What can we expect from your set? Is there anything exciting? Is there going to be like cannons, spaghetti cannons and everything?
No, unfortunately, we're all really broke, so we can't afford that.
It doesn't pay us that much.
Exactly. But if you haven't been to one of our shows recently, which if you haven't, then you're missing out. But you can expect a really fun cover in our set. It is part of a really big release that we're part of. Essentially, it's like an album of covers that some people have put together, and we chose our song. We got a video clip coming out with it, but this song everybody knows, but it's not as mainstream as what you might expect. But yeah, the cover itself is loads of fun to play. I know the boys had a lot of fun writing it and doing these like really, really interesting tweaks to the cover itself. So yeah, you can expect obviously like all about high energy, but there's a really fun cover in the middle of it too.
Love it. I'm really excited now. That's going to be so good. Everyone loves a good cover in shows, but when it's when it's done well and it's been practiced, you know, it's been rehearsed and really thought out, it's just so different. So much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm so keen. Now, as mentioned, this episode is not just talking about my fifth birthday, but also just about me. But also something that you're passionate about. Now, to give everyone here a bit of reference, I asked you to jump on the podcast, and when I asked you what you wanted to talk about, you said, and I quote, "Band etiquette. I want to complain about what bad manners and bad habits bands have at shows."
Yeah. Yeah. That does my fucking head in.
Yeah. So come on, lay it on us. What are your top pet peeves?
Yeah. Oh, it's just, well, like, right off the bat, at the beginning of a show when everybody signed on and it's announced or it's not announced, it doesn't matter. But there's the question that's the elephant in the room or the email thread, and that is backline. And no, if the headliner isn't like proactively putting up backline, which if you aren't, you should. Unless there are exceptions, all right? This is not a flat rule, but there's exceptions. So if the headline isn't putting up backline, and the bookie is like, all right, like, sort the backline out amongst yourselves, and no one starts the conversation. Like, no one jumps in and is like, oh, like, we can supply this, but we run digital, so we can't run cabs. No one starts the conversation. And so it gets to, I don't know, a real life example, 2 days before the show or the day of the show, and people rock up with everything that they need to perform and they are unwilling to share. And it's like, okay. Then they get this attitude about them, like, you know, you can't spring this on me today. And it's like, well, you also weren't part of this conversation. Like, you weren't willing to come to the table, and now you're at the show and you're setting up cabs, and one other band needs cabs where everybody else runs digital. And it's irrelevant whether they have the equipment there as well or not. It's just like, you aren't just there for yourself. You're there to help make the show run smoothly. And it's really, really annoying when you're not part of that initial conversation, you're not proactive, and then on the day, you're not willing to help out either. It's about this bigger image of your band as well. Because, like, if you're nice, people remember.
Yeah.
And even if the other bands are assholes, right? If you're still nice, everybody remembers.
Yeah.
It's in your best interest to be the bigger person.
Exactly. And to add to that, my thing about headliners is the headliner, I think what you were trying to get at there was, like, the headliner should proactively aim to provide most of the backline, because obviously they're going to be there. Well, the idea is that they're there the whole time, and also they're in most ways the ones who are booking you, or commonly. But also the exception to the rule is if you're an interstate headline act, then obviously you don't as much. But I am so there with you about, like, being proactive about sharing gear, because even just as a manager coming from that perspective of, like, being in the backline chat and seeing what that just, like, that a band, like, won't respond, or I don't know why this gets me more, but it's when they only, like, they'll say they'll only bring one thing when the backline chat's only just started. It's like, so annoying.
Unless you have a really good, legitimate excuse as to why you can't bring something to the table. I see these really poorly thought out lies about people's inability to supply stuff or share. It's like, oh, well, you know, I'm working that day and I can't go straight from the office back home to pack the car and then come to the show or stuff like that. It's like, okay, pack your car the night before.
Yeah.
I'm a drummer. My car, it needs, like, I'd have to think, like, two steps ahead because I have the worst job of any band member. And
hold there. You cannot complain about your drum kit. You picked that. But also at the same time, it gets freaking old pretty fast, doesn't it?
look, it's Yeah, I picked it. I chose to be a drummer. I get that. Especially my drum kit too. My kick drum is so deep, like it's real fucking long. And so carting that around and trying to fit that on stage around like the other members on like small stages or medium stages even, like it's a headache. So yes, I chose it. I'm still allowed to complain. I'm going to complain.
I just feel like, and this is totally just a me thing, but every time somebody complains to me about how heavy their equipment is, all I think about is my friend from high school, and we would go to band camp. And for those of you, I don't even think you know this, but I used to play the flute, so I used to go to band camp.
I did know that, yeah.
And I used to have this friend that would play saxophone, violin, clarinet, and I think maybe like viola or something like that. And so whenever we went to band camp, she had like all this crap with her, plus her backpacks and everything. And she'd be like, "Jazz, can you help me?" And I'm like, so many times I just felt like being a bitch and just being like, "Well, you chose this, like, crap." Yeah.
I mean, to say like that they can afford to shave off like one or two instruments just to save themselves the trip.
Yeah, you know what I find the most ironic is that girl is not even playing music now, and it's like, oh my god, those poor instruments.
She burnt herself out.
Yeah, burnt herself out for no reason.
God, yeah. No, I get that. So yeah, no, I as a drummer, like, we've got to cart so much shit around. But I'm also like, I'm really not to sound like a smug piece of shit, but I am a nice guy. So like, when we get signed on to shows and the headliner, for whatever reason, even if they're local, they're like, "Oh, like we're either not going to, or we don't want to share backline. You need to sort out backline between you." I'm always the first one to be like, "All right, use my kit. It's there for everybody to use." And brings me to my next gripe is when other bands, other drummers, and this goes for any musician that's sharing like equipment, they don't help. Like, they're just so nonchalant. It's like they don't care that you are going out of your way to help them out and save them the trouble. The least they could do is at least say thanks. Because like, some musicians don't even say thanks or acknowledge the nice thing that you're doing. And I've gotten to the point now where I'm so bitter about doing these nice things for these bands that I'm just like, no. Like, I've done it for years.
Yeah.
And I am just so over it. And I'll still do it, but
yeah,
at least.
But you're getting bitter about it.
But I'm getting bitter and I'm going to complain. It's just, it's real shitty. And people remember. I remember. I'm not going to name anybody, but I remember every single band and band member that have rocked up with a shitty attitude after I'm doing them a favor. And they stick out like a sore thumb because they're like the only band on the lineup that has this shitty attitude about the back line or about the show. Everybody else is like super chill and they're there to make friends and like have a good time. But these guys, like, they rock up with a bad attitude. Like, they, like, everyone's in direct competition and there's no room to be nice. It's like, no, like, it costs you nothing. It's okay. You can really smile at me.
Exactly. And I think what a lot of musicians or bands don't understand or see is that, like, we do remember that stuff and you get put on a list.
Do you have a list? Do you have like a burn book?
Look, I'm thinking about starting one. But yeah, every band has a list of bands that they won't work with and don't want to work with. And some of them are just purely like my experience, some are their experience, some are both. Some are just purely because that band always plays the same venue and hasn't seemed to grown up their career ladder or their show ladder. But that's just to help protect our reputation, to make sure we're going past that as well. You definitely remember, and it does make it harder for your band if you are on that list, because particularly like someone like yourself, you work in so many bands and that list goes with you. And then if you have a label and you have management and you tell the management that you don't want to particularly work with that band for, say, Future Static or whatever, and then that they also will take that consideration on for the next people they work with. Like, it's a nice little chain link that goes around and they don't realize how much it's all interlinked.
Yeah, it's in your best interest to at least be polite.
Yep.
Like, it says there's the bare minimum.
Yeah.
Like, just be nice to people.
Yeah. And then, like, what people don't also fully grasp when, like, a lot of musicians when they're young, and this is not just even in the scene that we are predominantly in, but, like, in every scene, is that when musicians go to pick people that they want for their headline shows that they're booking, they will book their friends. And if you are friendly mm-hmm. with them or you are nice to them, then you become friends, hence you'll get booked for the show. Like, yeah, it's
exactly
becomes a really big full picture. And like, while it may take 3 years to 5 years for it to circle back around, it's like karma. It circles back around.
It always catches up.
Every single time.
Yep. You always get paid your dues, whether that's good or bad, like, you get paid out.
Yeah. And I think in that exact example, I think there's one or two bands that I've really known at a show to really, like, get to me, and I was like, I would never working with you again. And it wasn't through any of my actions or anybody else's actions, but now they're just not bands now. And I'm like, what a surprise. I think, John.
Shocking.
Shocking.
Yeah, no, it's still surprising to me when bands carry this bad attitude, like, towards other people in the music industry, whether it's other bands, other professional connections, or other like crew members, like techs, like sound techs, lighting techs. They have this bad attitude towards them, and it's like, bro, like, that's not how you can, like, navigate through your own career as a group. It's not good. Because the second that you need someone and you sift through all of the connections that you might have already had, and no one's free, and then you finally have to go down to these people that you treated poorly or rubbed the wrong way and didn't try and fix, they're just going to say no.
Yeah.
Like, and then you're fucked. Like, you're not going to have any support. You're not going to have any crew to actually make the show a good one. And then, like, that's it. You're done.
You're done.
And then you sit back and wonder why aren't these shows, like, good shows, and why aren't people, like, rocking up, and why can't I make this? It's like, bro, like, you're doing bad things to people around you, man.
Yeah.
So it does my head in. It does my head in.
Cost you'll be nice.
Be nice.
Just that's why I was
nice,
like, you want to talk about this? Fantastic. Let's get at it.
Oh, yeah. This is just for me. I just need to talk to someone, like,
just talk it through.
Yeah, just talk it through, you know.
So, do you need to, like, talk to Lifeline after this or something? Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it is shocking to me that bands just carry this bad attitude. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, exactly. Now, because this podcast is for musicians and music industry professionals, what is the number one pet peeve of industry at shows for you? Because I personally have a lot.
When you say industry, do you actually mean, like, I guess, like, professionals, like agents, bookies, managers? So, yeah. Gripe against them?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Not against.
Okay. Against them or for them?
Well, like, against them being... I think the question is just, like, what is the pet peeve of them, is what I wrote, of industry professionals.
Pet peeve of them. I guess when you – so obviously when you have professionals coming to watch you perform, and obviously the goal is to impress them, one thing that sticks out to me is when you have a lot of this dead air in your set. So the transitions between songs – they're either, like, way too short and cluttered, or they're way too spaced out and there's this awkward air on stage between songs. And some bands, for some reason, try and fill it with a comedy sketch. Oh. These comedy sketches literally just inside jokes in the band, and no one else find these, like, it's not funny, man.
Yeah.
Like, if I wanted to go see a comedy show, I would go to a comedy show. I'm here. I paid money. These professionals either they paid money or they're on the door, or you invited them over to watch you perform music, play your songs, figure out the transitions. And when I say transitions, I'm not talking about like you rewrite a melodic transition between the first and second song. I'm just talking about everything structured. And so it's just like you're up on stage, you're there to perform. You should still be like performing between songs, whether that's not talking and you just count in for the next one, or you have dedicated space between the third and fourth song out of seven songs, and you have this roughly rehearsed intro or outro for your band. Like, this is who we are. Thanks for the headline, or thanks for the support bands for coming through, and like thanks to our sound tech and lighting tech. It's like I'm not there to hear you speak. Neither are these professionals that you're trying to impress. Like, you're there to perform music. Just do that. Just keep it simple. Just perform music.
Yeah, I like, love it. I feel like I'm such a drummer response as well, and I purely mean that in the way that like it is, there is an element of your job at the moment, or not at the moment, always, where to like see or hear that silence is now a real issue, and that you have to start like making the noise, or at the very worst doing the cringe dun dun dun.
that's the other thing, is when musicians try and fill that awkward space with noise. It's like nah, just play the next song, man. Yeah.
Especially noise that is completely out of genre as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, don't get me wrong, like when you're a massive band and you're like selling out arenas, or like you're playing Melbourne Pavilion or something like that, they're there to see your band and your personalities come through on stage. Plus, you're also playing for like an hour, so you have this real estate to talk to the crowd and to talk to each other. I feel like at least now in this current generation, people grew up with like Blink-182 and like Sum 41, where they're on stage and they say all these like super cringy things nowadays. But like back in the day, it was funny because you're a kid, and they're saying like all this highly problematic things nowadays. Doesn't make it okay back then, but like people, like bands back then, they filled their space with like really dumb shit on stage. And now that generation is performing music for ourselves, and I feel like a lot of people default to that. It's like, you gotta understand, even back then, bands like Blink and Sum 41, when they were doing that stuff on stage, they were already quite large. Like, they had a massive following already. You can't go playing Rod Laver, you know, and then all of a sudden you're at Workers Club, you're the second band on, and expect people to laugh at these same kind of jokes, because like, it's not funny. Like, it's just, it doesn't translate.
Yeah, and also it'll get you cancelled.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which you want to avoid at all costs at the moment.
Yeah. Look, don't do that. That's don't do anything that could get you cancelled.
Just preferably, you know.
It comes back to just being nice, you know?
Yeah.
It costs you nothing. It costs you nothing just to be a nice person. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, because to flip my question on its end, I see the in the audience perspective. And for me, music industry professionals and also the supports watching the shows and actively watching, not talking, not on their phones, is a huge thing for me. Like, if someone starts talking really loud during a set, it's really, in the last year, has started to like really like ramp me up. Like, I will go and tell somebody to shut up. Like, it's that bad for me.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah. But I find it just so disrespectful. Because it is, realistically. But I also find it really fascinating, like, when we're talking about that dead space, to see who picks up their phone and stays on their phone the whole time.
Yeah. Because
for me, there's two things on that side of things of like, first of all, if you're an industry professional and I've invited you to this show, don't go on your phone because you're getting in.
Yeah, pay attention.
And if you're going to go on your phone, you better be recording something because I'm putting it up on socials.
or hyping the band up to your mates. Like,
exactly. So, yeah. No, do that after the show. But also, like, when I see phones out, it's also a super huge indicator for me of, like, okay, this is where that band is sitting. This is how much people are interested, how they're not, like, mm-hmm. how disinterested mm-hmm. they are, how long in the set it actually takes them to become disinterested. Because let's be real, somebody at every show will pull out their phone. People just don't have the attention span to last half an hour anymore. It's ridiculous. Unless you're a psychopath on stage, and it's fucking fascinating. And even then, that's like a very small opportunity for that, because if they get a notification while you're still being a psychopath on stage, they'll still check their phone. Like, we're very much attached to it. But for me, with music industry professionals, if I've invited you to the show, I really like people to come up to me and introduce themselves, and ideally introduce themselves to the band. I just don't get it when I've specifically asked you, you've said yes, and you've came, and then you leave without introducing yourself to me. It's like, what was the point of you being here then? Like, now I have to email you again and be like, hey, what do you think of the show? Like, we could have had an actual proper conversation, but you decided not to.
Yeah.
That gets me. But you know what gets me even worse? When you've invited them to the show, you put them on the guest list, and then they don't show up.
Oh, yeah. Like when they said, yeah, I'll be there, and then they don't rock up.
They don't.
I mean, of course, it's really shitty.
It's so.
So don't even like message your head and be like, hey, like, I'm really sorry. You could just like lie to me to be polite. Something last minute has popped up and I can't make it.
Exactly. Like, or like on the Monday afterwards, message me being like, oh, so sorry, I didn't make it down to the show. No biggie. As long as you communicated that to me, fantastic. But like, I think I'm definitely finding from my perspective, because I do work with new and emerging artists, if somebody feels like their career is bigger than mine or bigger than the artists that they're looking at, they don't feel any regard to interact.
Obligations?
No obligations to anything. And it's just like, if it pisses me off to the point where it fuels me, when I'm just like, okay, guys, we're now gonna become so big that this person will nothing else but to have to work with us because we're so massive.
You fuel on spite.
Yeah. Look.
Ah, perfect.
Yeah, look, I am a kind person, but there are certain things that I'm.
Oh, I know your limits. Of course. It's no, boundaries and limits are healthy. 100%. I get that. Going back to like the attention span and the audience, it's either one of two things where the band is either boring or the audience members are actually disrespectful, and all the industry professionals aren't like polite enough to at least pay attention. It's a bad look for anybody when they're on their phone during a set. When they're in the crowd, they're not even at the back, like they're in the crowd on their phones. It's not a good look. That does my head in too.
Yeah. Can you even see it from where you are?
Me? No, because I've always got lights shining in my retinas. So I can't really see past the first two or three rows of people at the front. When I'm in the crowd, like, I notice, especially when it's like between the song or during a quiet part of a song and the lights go down and you see this glowing light from like three people like that way. It's like, come on, man, at least turn your brightness down. Like, at now least. Everybody's looking at you.
Ugh, yeah, it just gets me. Okay. I'm going to need therapy after this. I'm going to a show tonight too, and it's like, oh no.
Which show tonight?
Which show?
Yeah.
I'm going to see Bailey Judd and somebody else play at The Retreat. It's a free show.
Oh, at The Retreat.
Yeah, come along.
Oh. I would love to. I actually have another meeting after this.
Oh, busy man.
Busy man.
Or you can just sorry. Really try to play. You know, either one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Heck yeah, you know. Why not?
Full plug for Bailey. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to switch gears with you. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know, you juggle a full-time job, three bands that are all experiencing different levels of success, and your drum coaching. How do you manage your time effectively? Do you have agreements with the bands about who gets priority at the moment, or?
Essentially, it runs like it's first in, first served. So if a show's announced or we get a show offer, then if there's nothing else in the calendar for any of the other two projects, then it's like, yeah, I'm free, I'll do that. And then later, like 2 or 3 weeks or a month down the track, another band gets a show offer. I'm just not free. Obviously, there's very extreme exceptions. Like if there's an opening slot for a local band that I've said yes to, and then all of a sudden, another band gets a tour offer, main support, up the East Coast or around Australia, then I'm going to take the tour, man. Sorry.
Yeah.
But it's set up in a way that all of my bands, they understand that.
Mm.
And whenever I haven't had to yet. I've had things where I've had to try and reschedule, whether it's like a shoot day, a rehearsal, something else like a photo shoot or something else like that, or a band meeting. I've had little things like that come up where I've had to say, I either can't make it or can we like reschedule for literally like the next day. Everybody understands, like I've got so many moving parts,
mm-hmm.
and I do my best to avoid it. Yeah, I haven't really had to deal with major clashes yet.
Yeah.
But the main part is communication as well. So, yeah. Like, if one band gets a show, then it's like, yo, that date's pretty much blacked out. Can't do that. Same with, like, my personal life as well. Like, if I have an event on or I book a holiday or I'm otherwise unavailable, like, it's just like, no, that's blacked out. I'm not doing anything. You got to leave me alone. So yeah, there's a lot to juggle, especially being like full-time at work as well. It's a bit of a challenge, but that's what I have to do to try and make this work, because music's got to eat, and right now music is in pain, so I've got to do something else.
That's exactly right. And so I'm feeling like your calendar is your best friend.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. I'm so like with Syria, I take backseat, with almost everything, to the point where I just get told when and where to rock up and what that event is, whether it's a rehearsal, a shoot, or a show. I just get told like, hey, like if you're free on this date, lock it into your calendar. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. And then like the rest gets figured out with the other members, because I have a pretty active role in the other two bands, Loose End and Future Static, and so I don't really have the energy, or if I created the energy to use and work at the same capacity in Materia, I'd burn out. So yeah, calendars are a muse's best friend, even for your personal stuff. Like, mm-hmm. share it with people. You don't need to like share the intricate details of like a personal appointment. Just say, no, I'm not available like from this time to this time at this date. because then you don't get into arguments or disputes about, oh, but, you know, I booked the rehearsal, you know, I didn't tell you because the calendar was free, or like, I didn't check the calendar. It's like, well, you know, you should check the calendar because I'm not free. So yeah, calendars are very good.
Very good. So you actually
share Google calendars.
Yeah, you actually share your
Google calendars. Yeah, pretty much. The way it works with me is I have access to all three bands plus our management iCalendar. So every time a date gets added under a band, it's linked up on my phone, so my Google Calendar like shows all three profiles, I guess.
Yeah.
So I see straight away, like, hey, the 28th of December, are you free? I'll go through and I'll check it, and if there's nothing there, then I'm free. I know I'm free. I don't need to check. I don't need to go back and forth between four group chats and say, hey, do we have anything on this date? Because if it's not on the calendar, then I'm free.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. And if someone forgets to put a date in it, then it's not my problem.
Yeah.
Unless it's my job, and then it's my problem. but it hasn't happened yet. So yeah. It just comes down to communication. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot. I get that question a lot. Like, how do you juggle it? It's just like, it doesn't actually come all that hard. It's just, yeah. I've got good relationships with everybody that I work with in all three bands. So. That makes it easier.
Definitely sounds like it. And I think, yeah, I get that same question a lot because I juggle a lot as well. And it really is just that exact answer of just like, I have multiple calendars. I keep everything really separate, but like everything is within the same calendar on my phone. And, and I can see every profile and I know exactly when something's happening and when it's not. And yeah, I've definitely tried to get all of my artists onto that. And some of them really struggle.
Yeah.
And some of them are okay with it.
Yeah. But Google Calendars are great. They are like genuinely fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the start it's a bit of admin work, but once you get the ball rolling, it's really not that hard.
Yeah. And everything's in there and it's all color coded. It's so satisfying.
Yeah, color code your shit. Because holy fuck, it's so helpful.
So helpful. Even to the fact of like, in full transparency to everyone, I did book this interview into my calendar, but I realized just before that it was booked into my personal email because I must have done it when I was out, probably a little too tipsy to actually do it. And now I just sound like an alcoholic, honestly.
Yeah, you hit with a glass of wine. Oh, I booked this when I was drunk.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's all right. Yeah, this is a safe space. Yeah.
But yeah, like I, instead of going, oh my God, like where is it? I just saw the color and I was like, oh, it's yellow, then it must be in my personal one. Oh, bummer. Whoops-a-daisy. Thank God it's Jackson.
But hey, this is it. Yeah, so I don't care. Exactly. Yeah, at least it's in the calendar.
Yes, that's exactly right. Otherwise, I would have forgotten it. And that does happen. And I have people that I'll like be emailing them and they'll be like, oh, have you got this date free? And I'll say, I've got this, this, and this. Let me know. And then they take like a week sometimes to get back to me. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, so I'm free this, I am free Friday. And I'm like, well, now my Friday's booked.
I'm not anymore.
Yeah. Like, that's nice, darling.
Shame.
Yeah, exactly. But I love a good calendar. I also love the shocked. I don't know if you've ever done this to people, but shown them your calendar across everything and just shocked people's faces. It's just like, yep.
I think it was July for me this year was absolutely crazy. I think the whole month of July I had 3 days, not even like consecutively, I had 3 days where I didn't have anything to do. And I remember looking at July. I was like, holy shit, how am I going to do this? It wasn't too bad, but yeah, July was just stupid.
Intense.
Yeah. And thankfully, this last half of the year has been a bit more cruisy. So that's not been so bad.
Knock on wood. It'll get worse now that you've said that.
Yeah, I know. But it's come up to Christmas and New Year. So it always changes.
Yeah, it's a whole other beast, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's sort of like a weird calm before the storm, but I also still feel so busy. Like I just need some time personally to get like certain things done in my personal and my business stuff, and it just keeps on getting more. And I'm like, I just don't have the time. Like I know there's a weekend coming up and it's free, and I'm like purposely saying, don't book anything in, Jess.
Yeah. Take the time.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was going to do that this Saturday, and then all of a sudden I've got two interviews that I'm doing that day, and I've got a 30th party. It's like, God damn it.
Oh, God. 30th party. It's hard being popular, too. It's really difficult.
Yeah, it's just really tough. Like,
it's tough, yeah. It's a tough job, but hey, someone's got to do it.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah.
Someone's got to spend all their money on alcohol, you know?
Oh, exactly. But you know what? I'm a nice guy. That's a sacrifice I'm willing to make, so it's okay. Yeah.
As long as people say thank you.
As long as people say thank you. Yeah. Use your manners. It's not hard. Please.
Thank you so much for coming to this event.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Manners. Yeah.
Manners, always. Okay, last question for today. This is one I ask every single time. It is, when you're 90 years old in a retirement home and wanting to brag to your room neighbor about what you did during your long life, what would you like to say to them?
I want to say that I toured the world on the back of one of my bands. At the moment, the highest achievement I've got is playing Unify. And I'm quite proud of that. And if my whole career takes a nosedive and I do nothing else after this year, for whatever reason, at least I can say I played Unify. But the ultimate goal is to obviously like tour the world. Like I want to experience, I haven't even gone out of the country like under any circumstance. So to be able to say, and just go across the ocean to visit another country and experience other music cultures, as well as the cultures like overseas in general. Yeah, I want to say that I tour the world and I made my living off of music. That's so cliche. Everybody, every museum wants to do that. But like, I want to at least be comfortable with my living standards, having been paid by music that I play and perform and write. That's the dream, is to tour the world and live off the music. I don't want a day job. I like my day job, it's fine, but I don't want a day job. So
yeah
that'd be great.
That is the perfect answer. It's literally the answer that I've been waiting for since I wrote this question when I first started this podcast. I'm like, I just want somebody to say that they want to tour the world.
No one said that.
No one said that. Although, like, admittedly, you're the first musician I've actually like interviewed in the past. But like,
I was gonna say fake musos. They're not real musos.
I know. Yeah. I think a lot of industry professionals are just like really modest. Whereas, like, I really want somebody to just be like, oh, yep, I want to do public speaking. I want to get an aria. I want my bands to tour the world. I want this, that, and the other thing. Like, because that's what I want. That would be my answer.
No, so you gotta like go big.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. Well, it makes life more interesting.
Exactly. And even if you get halfway there, that's still like, I mean, it's probably going to be way more than what you would have like gotten if you didn't try to go as high or as hard as what you did.
Exactly right. Ugh. I love it. What a great way to end the podcast. How inspirational. Yeah. Thank you so much, Jackson, for coming on the podcast. It has been a blast. As we mentioned, the fifth birthday of JY Management Group is this month. We are celebrating by giving away 5 8-week Artist Foundations programs and with a big party. And if you ever wanted to work with me, now is the time in your career to do it. I will leave a link in the description for the giveaway and the tickets, I suppose, as well. So if you're in Melbourne, come down. There will be bands, goodie bags, and cake, which I'm really excited about. It's actually going to have my like logo.
Goodie bags and cake?
So I'm getting cake.
Oh my God. Hell yeah.
The group is going to be so good. Yeah. And I'm obviously personally so bloody excited for it. So thanks again, Jackson, for coming along. And I'm looking forward to eating cake with you in over a week.
Yeah, I am very much looking forward to it. And this has been fun. So thanks for having me on.